Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN. It is the center of free speech on the internet. This is where you come, and there's a lot of people who speak freely and give you news and information that you would be hard-pressed to find elsewhere. So keep this project going. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send a donation. If your donation is $100 or more, send your t-shirt size and we'll send you a freedom shirt. Not a free shirt, but a freedom t-shirt, and you'll be proud to wear that. Also go to nationalbugle.com. Lots of stuff is going on there. Of course, the Co-Certified app. And you can download that Co-Certified app by clicking on the link and leading a non-kosher certified lifestyle as step one to your non-kosher certified society. Okay, today's Monday. We have Mark Collett. Mark has had a lot of stuff going on his side of the pond. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hello, Patrick. It's great to be here. What a way to start the week as ever. But yes, we have had an awful lot going on here in the UK. And much of it, unfortunately, is bad news. It's bad news to report, and no one likes to be the bearer of bad news, but we are facing unprecedented challenges here. And it's very interesting, you started the show saying that RBN is the home of free speech. Well, the opposite of the home of free speech is now, or will be very soon, the United Kingdom, because there is a group in the UK, it's an arm of the government, or it is a body that the government has commissioned to produce a report. This group is called the Commission for Countering Extremism, and they've just released a report titled Operating with Impunity, Hateful Extremism, the Need for a Legal Framework. Now, this has been authored by one Sarah Khan and Mark Rowley. And they want to do the following, and I'm going to quote this directly: identify whether there are gaps in existing legislation or inconsistencies in enforcing the law in relation to hateful extremism. Now, that's very interesting, isn't it? That little sentence there. Gaps in existing legislation or inconsistencies in enforcing the law in relation to hateful extremism. What that leans towards is the idea that ultimately people are acting within the law. They don't like what these people are saying, and thus they want to tighten up the law or bring in new laws to prevent those people saying what they're saying. And when they're talking about these people or bringing certain people into line with new laws, they are actually talking about me and Laura Towler and our organization.
And very specifically, weren't you specifically mentioned?
Yes.
Targeted. Okay.
Yes, I can actually read from the document. Patriotic Alternative is a UK registered company created in November 2019 by Mark Collett, the former publicity director for the British National Party. The group is described as a white nationalist political group. We've never described ourselves as that. That's somebody else.
But somebody described you as that, and that's why they can use the passive voice without a subject.
Exactly. The deputy director is Laura Towler, who, like Collett, has a strong social media presence. Patriotic Alternative has promoted white nationalist and white supremacist narratives. Now, we have never, ever promoted supremacist narratives. The organisation aims to combat the replacement and displacement of white Britons by people who they state have no right to these lands. Mark Collett and Laura Towler contextualise the actions of Patriotic Alternative as an exercise in freedom of speech. Their behaviours are not currently addressed by either hate crime or counter-terrorism legislation because they neither directly threaten individuals or groups with protected characteristics or explicitly encourage violence or terrorist acts. However, it is our view that their active dissemination of a racial supremacist ideology does meet our definition for hateful extremism. Now, this is very interesting, isn't it? Our behaviours are not currently addressed by hate crime or counter-terrorism legislation because, as they rightfully say, we don't threaten anybody and we never, ever encourage violence. Or they say explicitly encourage violence. We don't encourage any form of violence, whether explicitly or otherwise. In fact, we tell people to go out and leaflet. We tell people to do banner drops. We tell people to get involved in community organisation. This is the opposite of violence. This is the direct opposite of violence. This is peaceful action. But they are trying to essentially change the law to make what we do illegal. And a huge push with this new legislation is to make it illegal to talk about demographic change. Now, this would completely alter the political landscape in Britain. And I'm probably paraphrasing here because they're not going to be making it illegal to talk about demographic change. They're going to make it illegal to be critical of demographic change. And I'll give you an example. If there is a group of people, if there are a group of people who are producing an article, making a video, doing something like that, and they are praising demographic change, they are celebrating white people becoming a minority, those people will be allowed to do that. So the government isn't disputing the facts. They are also not saying it is illegal to talk about the facts. What they are saying is it should be illegal to be critical of those facts. But if you are happy about those facts, if you want to embrace their vision of the future where white people are a minority, that is what is going to be illegal. And this all of a sudden ties in with things that we've talked about at length on this show. Multiculturalism, multiracialism, multicultural societies, the idea of equality. This isn't just a political system. This is a cult. This is something which is driven by a narrative that can only be described as religious. And multiculturalism is becoming the official religion of the state, to the point where they acknowledge certain facts, but if you are not positive about those facts, then you go to jail. You go to jail for being critical of facts that they acknowledge. So, as I say, this isn't being called a conspiracy theory anymore. The whole idea of white people becoming a minority in the West is no longer being treated like a conspiracy theory. They aren't saying in this document that white replacement, white displacement, white people being dispossessed of their lands, they're not saying that that is in fact a conspiracy theory. What they are saying is that you can't be critical of that. And this takes us into a whole new playing field and essentially will make millions of normal white people in Britain who oppose mass immigration and have justified concerns about demographic change into criminals. We will be essentially criminalized for having thoughts. We will be placed in a category of hateful extremists. Now, a hateful extremist is somebody who has certain beliefs, somebody who holds on to certain ideas. And I believe that if this legislation is passed, what they will then do is say, there are this many thousand Islamic hateful extremists, and there are this many million white hateful extremists. So white hateful extremists outnumber all other forms of hateful extremists. Because remember, the vast majority of normal white people are concerned about mass immigration. They are concerned about demographic change. They will say that white people, by far and away, make up the largest number in terms of raw figures of hateful extremists. And then, as an extension of that, they will start branding those white people who they've already branded as hateful extremists as terrorists. And they will essentially widen the definition of a terrorist act to tweeting something or posting something on social media. And that is where they're going with this. There will be a huge widening of the net, massive redefinition of terms such as terrorist and extremist, and these will be used to prevent white people from organizing against their own replacement or along any form of racial or ethnic lines.
That, I mean, you have to describe that as Orwellian. You can't even complain about this. It's not as if they're saying it's not happening. They're admitting it's happening, but you're not allowed to complain. So how is this going to affect your day-to-day operations?
Well, at the moment, we're not changing anything we do. We're not making any changes at this point in time. And I personally don't intend to make any changes to what we're doing. If this goes through, we are going to have to look at how we approach things. But I personally would not wish to change what we're doing or the way that we do it. If we were to change what we were doing, if we were to stop speaking about demographic change, that would essentially defeat the whole purpose of our organization existing. Our organization wouldn't really have any point anymore, because the largest issue that we discuss is demographics, and we say that everything is downstream from demographic change. Demographic change is the big issue of the day, and the problems that we as people of European descent face are all essentially stream of that. This huge change to our racial and ethnic makeup is causing the problems, or problems are symptoms of that larger issue. So overcrowding, it's actually a symptom of immigration and demographic change. Our changing culture is a symptom of demographic change. The grooming gangs, a symptom of demographic change. So we would then be placed in a situation where we either abandoned everything we stood for, or we continued to speak in a peaceful and reasoned fashion and faced criminal prosecution. At that point, I certainly won't be asking anybody to go to jail. I certainly won't be asking anyone to say the same things that I will say, but I will carry on saying them myself. I've already made the decision that I will continue standing on this platform, even if that technically risks me going to jail or facing arrest, because you have to draw a line in the sand. And if you don't, at that point, stick to your guns, ultimately, what are you worth? What is your organization worth? If you're going to fold at the first sign of trouble,
and so
how can anyone have any faith in you?
So is this so there's a report saying that you guys are not breaking current law. How close is a new law that is going to illegalize what you say? How close is that to where we are now?
I don't know. I don't know how close this proposed law is. This is obviously a report, and whether it's incorporated into law is up to MPs. And if it is incorporated into law, that is something that will obviously have an effect, but then that has to be tested in the courts, and it has to also be tested against existing human rights legislation. So there is a massive issue here where this can be fought, and it's just whether anybody is actually brave enough to stand up and fight it. That is the big issue.
And if this was to become a bill, what we would call in America a bill, proposed legislation, do you think there would be widespread support from the existing parties, from the Tories, from the Labour Party?
Oh, absolutely. If there was, if this was brought forth as a proposed legislation, if this went before Parliament, there would be huge amounts of support for this, because almost everybody in Parliament wants to see. I can't think of anyone who would actually argue against this. And if they did argue against it, I think they would be arguing against it from the point of view of free speech and free speech alone. And they would say something like, look, it's better that these people are out in the open so we can monitor them and control what they say rather than pushing them underground, because that would make them more dangerous. We need to debate these ideas. They would come at it from that point of view. They certainly wouldn't come at it from a point of view where they supported anything that we said or were actively campaigning for the same things as us. But there might be some small chance that certain MPs or certain people, certain ministers or even people in the House of Lords may at some point support our right to continue talking about these things. But unfortunately, I don't believe that would be enough to go against the tide. I mean, maybe the House of Lords would knock this legislation back, but I think ultimately this would end up being tested, not in Parliament, but actually in the courts, to whether these restrictions on free speech. I think it would be a situation where it wouldn't be the government that would decide whether these were restrictions on free speech that could actually be implemented, but it would be a decision made by the courts. And if the courts decided, that would also have to be taken, or also the European human rights legislation would have to be taken into account as well. Because although Britain is leaving the EU, it is still part of the we're still under the watchful eye of the European Court of Human Rights, because the European Court of Human Rights isn't actually part of the EU. It's part of a separate body that Britain hasn't left.
Mm-hmm. I remember, it must have been a dozen years ago or so, I was at an event with Denis Kucinich, who was a congressman. He was still in Congress. I think he was still in Congress. He must have been still in Congress at the time. And he had been presidential candidate in 2004 and in 2008. He didn't get all that far, but he did have a committed following, and it was because he was the one candidate who made the Iraq war or these foreign wars his number one issue. So he was very, very outspoken about the wars. That was his big issue. That was his issue. And yet he was talking about having just come from Washington and having to vote on some sort of defense authorization bill, a bill that would send money to Congress, to the military, to fund the wars. And he was talking about what a hard time he had, even as the most anti-war member of Congress. He voted against it, but he told how difficult it was to vote against it, because they had rolled some sort of anti-hate legislation into it. So this is something that is done from time to time when they want to get something passed. They'll just, in this case, like the defense authorization bills always pass. And so if you want something that might be controversial, you wrap it into a defense authorization bill and it gets passed. Well, for him, he wanted to vote against the defense authorization bill because that was his whole shtick. But yet there he was telling a group of liberals or progressives or whatever, how difficult it was for him to vote against a war funding bill because it had this hate legislation. Of course he would want to support hate legislation. Now that was, I guess, a dozen years ago. The hate legislation was something that was mandatory for a left-wing politician to support, not yet for a right-wing politician, but I guess we're beyond that now, and who would oppose anti-hate legislation? It's just something it's gotten, I guess we have a kind of a ratchet effect. It's gotten impossible to, because they've taken control of the narrative. Everything is described as hate. Any resistance to their plans is described as hate, and you can't oppose efforts that would stop hate. Anyway, we're up at the break. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
For over 20 years now, Extendabite has proven time and again, it really works. Here is a testimonial from Amazon.com. I received an arterial switch at birth. In my mid-20s, I started getting slight runs of NSVT. Nothing too serious, but enough to cause worry. I started taking Extendivite a little over 2 years ago, and it helped cut the palpitations and NSVT down drastically. This isn't a cure-all supplement. I strongly recommend a good diet and exercise to aid in any heart troubles you may be having, and I strongly recommend giving Extendivite a try. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Welcome back to the show. So one thing that happened, and it actually happened not this past weekend, but I believe the weekend before, there was a big CPAC conference, Conservative Political Action Committee, or whatever it is, which featured a speech by Donald Trump. But it's the high point of the year for conservatives, for political conservatives. It was held in, I believe, Orlando, Florida. But the same weekend, in the same city, Nick Fuentes held a conference called the AFPAC, the America First Political Action Committee. I believe that's what it stands for. And he had a sitting member of Congress, Paul Gosar, and a former member of Congress, somebody who left, who was lost his seat at the beginning of January, Steve King, Representative Steve King of Iowa. They were there. And then Nick Fuentes gave a good speech. And there was quite a contrast, whereas the CPAC had homosexuals, because they were conservative homosexuals. They had trannies, transsexuals, whatever, they're trans people. But Nick Fuentes, he gave a speech. He had other people give a speech, but he gave a final speech, which I thought was pretty good. And we talk about that. We'll be talking about that somewhat later in the week with Don Advo. But I understand, Mark, that you saw the speech.
I certainly did, and I thought it was excellent. I thought it was really what I'd been hoping for from Nick for some time, and it was very much a white nationalist speech. He came out and he said what we all know to be true, that America is fundamentally a nation that was founded by white people, by people of European descent, and those people of European descent, those white people, weren't just white people, they were white Christians. And he said this, he seemed very proud of saying this, and I believe that that was the correct thing to say. I think it's obviously 100% right from a technical perspective, and I can't really fault him. I think it was absolutely fantastic. It was what I'd hoped to hear from Nick for some time, and personally speaking, I think that he gets things off to a very, very good start for his organization. I think that he's put his flag in the sand. He said what many people were hoping Trump would say as president. He would talk about, you know, white people, the rights of white people, and he said that. I've got to commend him. It was an excellent speech, not just in terms of the content, but also in terms of delivery. And really, I can't really fault anything. Not that I'm looking to pick holes. Not that I look to pick holes in people's work. But if somebody said, "Can you fault it?" The answer is no. It looked like an excellent event. They had a good number of people there. It seemed to be getting quite a bit of support. He came out with a message that was definitely Eurocentric, white nationalist, whatever you want to call it. And I think that's what needs to be said. He didn't shy away from this. He didn't go back on things that had been said in the past. And I just hope he carries on that route. I said initially when he was doing the groping, when Nick Fuentes was sending people to these Turning Point USA events, I said at the time it wasn't good enough. And my answer was, and when people said, "Well, why are you saying this? Why are you being negative? It's fantastic." I said, "I'm not being negative." So I'm not being negative at all. I said, what they're doing is they're trying to sink this mainstream, multicultural, multiracial Republican ship. That is what Nick Fuentes is busy doing. And I said at the time, it's all well and good sinking the ship. But if you're going to sink the ship, well, actually, I said, you've got to do two things. You've either got to take over the ship, and you've got to become the new captain of the ship, or alternatively, you have to sink the ship and you have to be there with life rafts so that when the ship's sinking, the decent people who want to get off the boat can get off the boat and they jump onto your life raft and then sail away with you as the captain. That is how it has to work. You can't just destroy the group for the sake of destroying it. If you've got nothing there as an alternative, the destruction is absolutely unwarranted and pointless. And at the time, I got some flack from that. I had some people say, "Oh, why are you being negative? Nick's doing great work. Leave him alone." Now, I wasn't having a pop at Nick Fuentes. I was offering Nick Fuentes and his followers advice. And I'm not taking any credit for this. I'm not saying, "Ooh, they followed my advice. Well done, lads." That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is they've done the right thing. They basically saw the writing on the wall. They understood, or began to understand at some point, that simply breaking down mainstream conservative institutions and groups wasn't going to win the political war. What was going to win the political war was breaking down those groups and then supplying a very attractive alternative for people to come to, which is what they appear to be doing.
Okay, well, I guess we'll talk a little bit more about that after these important messages.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model Easy 4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com, EAZEOFF.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new Easy 4 for a limited time. Ease-Off.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. Ease-Off LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an Energy Planner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Welcome back. So we have Nick Fuentes, who's very young, and in his speech, he talked about the white Christian foundings, and he'd look out at the audience and he'd say things to say, he'd say mostly white. He'd say things like that. He was being specifically talking about white people, but it really wasn't in like a way. He wasn't saying we got to send everybody not white back to Africa or back to where they came from, but it was very explicitly an acknowledgement that the history of the United States is a history of white people from England, primarily from England or from Great Britain, founding this country, and it being built up. Being the America that everybody around the world wants to come to is a creation of a European man. He was pretty explicit about this. One of the other speakers had said something about the Judeo-Christian foundings, and he corrected that person, and he has spoken. I don't know if he was very explicit about Jewish power in the AFPAC speech, but he has been explicit about it in his podcasts. So it's very interesting, and it comes at a time when, for instance, on Tucker Carlson's show, he's had a couple of people in the past week or so. I don't watch every show anymore, but he's had at least a couple of people in the past week or so talk about the war on white people or the attack on white people. I guess they're using the term white people under attack. And how important is it to get a phrase like that, white people being under attack? How important is it to get that into the discourse that normies are going to see?
It's very, very important. Now, a while back, I remember using the phrase white genocide quite a lot. And at the time, people said to me, you don't want to use that particular phrase. And I said, okay. And I said, I felt that it was important to use that phrase because not only was it correct, but I think it's actually a very powerful phrase to use. I think it's something that carries a lot of weight when you put things in those terms. Not only is it actually correct, but it is powerful. It's motivational. And I remember talking about this with people, and people said, you'll never get that popularized. And now a group of us have been using the term white genocide for quite some time, and it has become popularized. And I think other phrases like the attack on white people, white minority, replacement, displacement, phrases like that, words like that, are being used more and more in the mainstream. Now, we talk about winning. And when you talk about winning, you often have some very, very grand ideas. When you say victory, the idea of achieving victory, what does victory mean? Well, victory obviously means that you're winning. Victory obviously means that you are making headway and gaining some form of power. And those things are very obvious comments to make, and people might be thinking, what's Mark talking about? This is very obvious. But when you talk about winning, you tend to think about the end goal. You tend to think about crossing the line. So if you talk about a race and you say, this runner won the race, your first thing I think of anyway, I don't know what you think of, Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, the first thing I think of when you say the runner won the race, you think of that runner leaning forward, giving it his final burst of power and breaking that tape as his nose goes over the line and the crowd cheers. But when you say winning, you don't think of the race itself. You don't think of all the footsteps that runner took throughout that race. You don't think of all the breaths. You don't think of the strategy. I mean, you talk about running, but there is a strategy. When do you give it your all? When? How do you pace yourself? You don't think of the trainers. You don't think of the clothes they're wearing. You don't think of the special drinks they drank before, or the time they went to bed the previous evening, or what their diet's been for the last week. You don't think of their training regime over the past year. You think of them breaking that tape as they go across the line, because that was them winning the race. But the steps towards winning are, well, there's a multitude of steps. There are so many, you probably couldn't list them all. And along the way to that final victory, along the way to breaking that tape, there are so many little victories. There are so many little personal bests. There are so many improvements. There is the loss of fat, there is the gaining of muscle, there is the advancement of many, many other things. There's learning strategies. There are steeling your body so that you can push yourself just that little bit further. There's increasing your lung capacity. Sometimes athletes train at very high altitudes. And it's the same with us. It's the same with us. We have a goal, and winning means securing a future for our people. It means taking power and securing a future of people, and I'm well aware of that. But along the way, there are lots of small victories, lots of little landmarks. So when I say winning, I don't necessarily mean we've gained power, but I mean there's lots of little incremental victories, things that take us closer to being ready for that final race, or things that take us closer to being at that finish line, steps in the actual race. And one of those little victories, one of those steps forward for us, is the popularization of words and phrases that are important, that shape public discourse, that get the public talking about problems and issues that we hold dear, that we're trying to educate people on. And when we first started working together in 2016, terms like white genocide, terms like replacement, weren't widely used. They are widely used today, and that's thanks to a multitude of people working on several different fronts to popularize those terms and phrases. And I've got to say, Nick Fuentes has played an important role in that, and he is helping us to win. And I think we should never, ever underestimate the effect all of these little victories have. And our enemies certainly don't underestimate the effects that their little victories have. Our enemies are very, 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 very good at acknowledging the effects that their little victories have. Sometimes we're a little bit more defeatist. You know, our enemies didn't defeat us by one fell swoop. They didn't just march to power and then impose everything they wanted on us. They beat us through lots of small incremental changes. Feminism, getting women into the workplace, slowly making women hate men. That didn't happen overnight. It happened through many, many small incremental changes. The same with the LGBT lobby. They didn't start with transgender toilets in schools and little boys chopping off their penises. It was a slow march forward. And I think that we, as nationalists, have to acknowledge that this isn't going to be won overnight. It's a slow march forward. And Nick Fuentes is playing a very important role in that. His organization is playing an important role in that. And he is helping us to win lots of little small battles and to popularize phrases which will shape the political discourse for years to come. And I think we all need to double down on this. We need to be strong enough to talk about race, just as homosexuals were strong enough to talk about the fact they were homosexuals. We need to talk about displacement. We need to talk about replacement. We need to have open conversations with our neighbors about issues that are on our minds, just as feminists did, just as people who have pushed for mass immigration have done, just as multiculturalists have incrementally changed things. And I think now that we're starting to see Tucker Carlson talking about white rights, I think the fact we're talking about seeing congressmen and ex-congressmen attending America First, the fact we are seeing governments such as the UK government desperate to stop people talking about demographic change, is because we may be further down that road, further down that path to winning the race than we thought. And they're absolutely terrified that more and more normal people are considering issues that at one point were quite taboo. I think at one point it was pretty taboo to talk about the things that we are mentioning now, but not so anymore. And I think if we keep pressuring, if we keep putting pressure on the mainstream Republicans, if we keep putting pressure on talk show hosts, if we keep putting pressure on congressmen, on senators, if we keep infiltrating the Trump movement and speaking to people within that movement, we can shift things a lot quicker and we can bring people more and more over to our way of thinking. I think this time is a golden time for us and has a lot of golden opportunities. And we are, for the first time in a long time, making massive, massive strides forward in influencing popular opinion.
So my background, I'm old enough to have gone to anti-Vietnam War demonstrations as a kid, but going, and I remember them. And demonstrating against various weapon systems and nuclear armaments and the Cold War and these things, and it's been kind of the trajectory. And then, of course, especially since the first Gulf War, it seems that the entirety of American foreign policy revolves around this little country of Israel. But even before that, it seemed very much like that. And so Jewish power was always very obvious in foreign policy, and then especially since these forever wars, which really started with the Gulf War in 1991, or the invasion in 1990, the so-called invasion of Kuwait by Saddam Hussein's Iraq. Everything's, it's not just that our foreign policy has been wrapped up in that, but almost all other policy is mobilized in support of that foreign policy. You look at the Patriot Act, for instance, which, with everything it entails, which was basically, it was to mobilize all resources in support of this. So, and I would see this Israel-centric, this Jewish-run foreign policy as an obstacle to all sorts of other things, whether it was you know, environmental improvements or economic things, national health insurance, whatever. And it wasn't until fairly late, it wasn't until I read David Duke's book that I realized that the migration that was going on, the immigration that was going on, A, I became more aware of the scale of it, but B, that the intent was explicitly to turn whites into a minority, that this was the attack on whites was part of a Jewish move, you know, moved by the Jewish power structure to cement its power by eliminating the main possible rival to it. I remember having a discussion with at a Stormfront conference with Truck Roy, who used to be, he was, I guess, my predecessor on the Stormfront radio show. And I had been talking about Jewish power, and he said something like, well, yeah, that's all important, but at the end of the day, if we defeat Jewish power and wind up being a country of Mexicans and people from and Asians and people from all over the world, and you know, white people no longer really have a home, you know, a homeland, that's not satisfying to them. And I thought, wow. You know, because I'd been very focused on Jewish power, and I saw that here's somebody who's actually focused mostly on the survival of the white race. And the, and on the other hand, if you had say 1987 demographics just kind of frozen, or 1992 demographics just kind of frozen, so there's going to be you know, a significant white majority, and without all of the genetic the injection of black male fatherhood into the white gene pool, but that white race remained a basically just the foot soldiers for world Zionism. How satisfying would that be? I don't know. I'm just raising that up. Is the survival? We want a future for the white race. What if that future is just simply as a what is the golem for world Zionism, where we go around and just smash the rest of the world on behalf of Zionism? Why am I even bringing this up? But I did. So there you go, Mark.
Well, I think it's very important to discuss these things. And I've got to say, obviously, we don't want to be slaves to anybody. White people don't want to be the slaves to anybody, nor should we be. However, I have to say that the single most important issue, in my opinion, does have to be our racial survival. All else does come after that. That is, to me, the single most important issue. If we cease to survive, that's it. We're gone. There's no bringing it back. There's no changing that. Nothing can be fixed from there. As long as we continue to survive, everything can be fixed. Everything can be altered from that point. Our existence is the most important thing. Creating a future for our children is the most important thing. Obviously, I don't want to be a slave to Zionists. I'm not suggesting that we give in any way to Zionist power. But I think most important issue today for white people is our continued existence.
So, and I more recently I've thought about North Korea, and North Korea has gone through so much, and North Korea has a very harshly paternalistic, to put it mildly, a harshly paternalistic governing structure and whatnot. But at the end of the day, whatever happens in North Korea, those Korean people are still there, and they haven't been replaced, and they can rebuild, which is not whatever happens to us. If we gain control of our societies right now, we can rebuild. Although there will be there will be some demographics that cannot be undone. There is, but let's talk about that on the other side of the remaining minutes.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
So we are back, and just before the break, I said there are facts on the ground. Certain things can't be rolled back. We've got and I think it's intentional. And I use the term facts on the ground. That is an Israeli term, basically, for building settlements in the occupied territories and getting people used to living them in them. They become just facts that can't be undone. And when you've got a white woman who's had children with a black man, those babies are basically facts that can't be undone. The question is, has it gone too far already? If we were to get back control of our societies promptly, is that going to be good enough? I'm just going to kick it over to you.
I think getting control at the moment is what we need to do. We need to, and I'm not saying it's good enough, but it's a starting point. And you make a very good point that the people of North Korea have been through terrible things at the hands of their communist overlords, but they still exist as a people. And that's very important to know. They still exist as a people. Whereas we, as people of European descent, we are facing a point where we no longer exist as people, where we will cease to exist, where we will be minorities and eventually nothings in our ancestral homeland. And at that point, that is a fate worse than any form of occupation. And if you look at Eastern Europe, and not in any way making light of what Eastern Europeans went through under the Soviet regime, but those people are still here. We are facing a situation where we will not still be here, where we will actually cease to exist. And that's the big difference. So I think at the moment, the most important thing we can do is secure our future, is to ensure that our children do have a future. And once we've done that, everything can be righted from there. If we gain some sort of power and ensure a future for our children, I believe that things can be righted from that point. But to get to that point where things can be righted and where other things can be implemented, we first must still exist. And that sounds like an obvious point, but it's true. And all other things flow from there, really. And as long as we have a small number of our people left who are racially conscious, we can always come back. It isn't too late. The only time it ever becomes too late is if we get to that point where there has been such a degree of mixing, such a low birth rate, such a massive degree of mass immigration, that we are so few and far between that as any form of group, any form of meaningful group, we do not exist anymore. And that is something we must keep pushing back against. And that's why, tying this in with everything we said today, it is so important that we popularize the language that we are popularizing, and we keep people talking about demographics, demographics, and demographics again, until this is the one and only thing that our people are talking of.
Okay, well, Mark, thank you so much for joining me today. We always look forward to having you on Mondays. And I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. In fact, with Don Advo from Stormfront.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast 2-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.